ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 7, text number 26. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishyani chabhutani mangtu veda nakoshchana. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows. Purported by Srila Prabhupada. Here the question of personality and impersonality is clearly stated. If Krishna, the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were Maya, material, as the impersonalists consider him to be, then like the living entity, he would change his body and forget everything about his past life. Anyone with a material body cannot remember his past life, nor can he foretell his future life, nor can he predict the outcome of his present life. Therefore, he cannot know what is happening in past, present, and future. Unless one is liberated from material contamination, he cannot know past, present, and future. Unlike the ordinary human being, Lord Krishna clearly says that he completely knows what happened in the past, what is happening in the present, and what will happen in the future. In the fourth chapter, we have seen that Lord Krishna remembers instructing Vivishvan, the sun god, millions of years ago. Krishna knows every living entity, because he is situated in every living being's heart as the Supersoul. But despite his presence in every living entity as Supersoul, and his presence as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the less intelligent, even if able to realize the impersonal Brahman, cannot realize Sri Krishna as the Supreme Person. Certainly, the transcendental body of Sri Krishna is not perishable. He is just like the sun, and Maya is like a cloud. In the material world, we can see that there is the sun, and that there are clouds and different stars and planets. And the clouds may cover all these in the sky temporarily, but this covering is only apparent to our limited vision. The sun, moon, and stars are not actually covered. Similarly, Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord. By his internal potency, he is not manifest to the less intelligent class of men. As it is stated in the third verse of this chapter, out of millions and millions of men, some try to become perfect in this human form of life. And out of thousands and thousands of such perfected men, hardly one can understand what Krishna is. Even if one is perfected by realization of impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma, he cannot possibly understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, without being in Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnana Timurandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Srila Prabhupada is talking about something very, very wonderful here. He is talking about the most wonderful thing, actually. He is talking about that thing known as Krishna consciousness. There is nothing like Krishna consciousness. Actually, the entire world is suffering because they are not Krishna conscious. A Krishna conscious being is relishing the sweetest happiness at every minute because he is experiencing Krishna within everything. And he is also experiencing everything within Krishna. His vision is not ordinary. He sees everything within Krishna and Krishna within everything. Premanjana charito bhakti valochanena santaksadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yang shama shundaram achint yuganasvarupam govindam adipurusham tamaham vajami. So how can we achieve that wonderful state of consciousness where we see Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna? That is described by Brahmaji. He has given you the hint how you can achieve that state of consciousness. You simply have to find one shop, just like they have the druggist shop or chemistry, but the chemist, they call it. In America, we call the drugstore. In India, the chemist. Different names are there. You go to that place where they sell the medicine. You have to find one medicine store where they sell one ointment. You see, what is that ointment? Prem Anjana, the love ointment. Love of God ointment. The Krishna Premanjana. You have to find one drugstore where they are selling the ointment which, by placing that ointment on the eye, then you can see Krishna everywhere, you see. That drugstore we must find in. I know. Actually, I do know. By Prabhupada. Prabhupada is treated. Prabhupada was a pharmacist. So now he has created ISKCON as a pharmacy, you see, which is dispensing that prescription medicine, Krishna Premanjana, all over the world. So this is a pharmacy, actually. You may think this is a temple, but actually it is a pharmacy. Of course, it is temple also. But it is a pharmacy, because here we're giving prescription. In each and every one of our ISKCON centers, we are pharmacists, and we are giving this ointment, Krishna Prema, Premanjana, the ointment of love of God. So usually when you have an ointment, how do you apply to the eye? You take some, maybe you put some here. I know the eye drops, you put it here, and then you blink, and then it spreads to the eye. This particular ointment, you apply it through the ear. It's a very unusual ointment. By hearing from the lips of the devotees of the Lord, you see, you put the ointment in here and then it comes to the eyes, to the ears. This is actually the easiest way. Srila Prabhupada explains in his introduction here to Bhagavad Gita as it is. He explains that by hearing from realized souls, this is the easiest way to become self-realized. All we have to do is hear from those who are actually fixed in Krishna consciousness. That is the simple formula. How we can get that premanjana, that ointment of love of God. Krishna is revealing here very wonderful in relation to Arjuna about himself. He's telling Arjuna directly, I'm not an ordinary person, I'm not just your friend, but actually I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. and therefore I know everything. Absolutely everything is known to Krishna. Sarva Gya. He's the one who knows everything. You cannot hide anything from Krishna. So there's no sense trying. You might as well just open your heart to Krishna completely. Can't pull a fast one on the Lord. He knows everything that's going on in your heart. So we may as well just honestly admit, my dear Lord Krishna, I want to be your devotee, but I have so many material desires which are polluting my heart. My Lord, I cannot hide them from you because you can see everything. You can see all the lust hanging in there. You can see all the greed. You can see all the laziness, all the egotism. You can see all of it, Lord. So please free me. Please free me. There's no sense trying to make a show to Krishna being an advanced devotee. He knows how fallen we are, you see. He knows. So we might as well just admit, yes, Krishna, I am greatly in need of rectification from my fallen condition. So you kindly save me. You see, this humble position is the best, the safest position. Even Prabhupada, you know, in Boston, he told us that, said, I'm always praying to Krishna that I won't fall down. So if Prabhupada is always begging Krishna, please protect me from fall down, then what is our position? You see, if we are not begging Krishna at every minute to protect us from fall down, then we are in a very, very fallen position. Actually, sometimes when I give these, emphasize the humility, the devotees become a little bewildered. Well, become as humble as Sankarshan Prabhu is advocating, then how can I even function? People sometimes have doubts. And how can I even function if I make myself that low, you know, that humble? But no, actually, it doesn't work that way. Even in the Bible, Lord Jesus says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. So actually, the more we become humble, the more we become empowered for preaching this Krishna consciousness. That's a thing. The more we consider ourselves very low, very humble, very fallen, very, very, very much in need of rectification, the more we become powerful for spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. For defeating the atheistic arguments, for establishing Krishna consciousness very firmly here in the city of Berlin. So don't be afraid that if you become too humble, that, you know, you become some kind of impotent eunuch, that people will just walk all over you, you won't be able to accomplish anything, you know, your life will become an embarrassing disgrace if you become too humble. It doesn't work that way. You see, in the material life, that is the conception. The more you can puff yourself up, that's your advancement in material life. But in Krishna consciousness, it is just the opposite. The more you can become humble, that is how you become very powerful. Nobody was more humble than Srila Prabhupada. I don't know if you know that pastime, but, of course, when Prabhupada would go to the airport, everyone would go. It was a big thing to see Prabhupada, to greet him, and to give him the send-off at the airport. And in those days, there was no security. You could go right up to the gate where they get on the plane. So, there was several hundred devotees in there. You know, everybody's sitting in the chairs, ready to go through the gate to get on the prayer plane. But the area was completely packed with hundreds and hundreds of devotees surrounding Prabhupada. And there were so many devotees, they were blocking the hallway also. Nobody could even get through. It was like a wall, like the Great Wall of China. It was the Great Wall of ISKCON, completely clogging the airport. Nobody could get through. So the airport workers were very distraught. This is, we have a traffic flow nightmare going on here, and these people with the saffron robes and the shaved heads are the cause of this. We have to do something to solve this problem. So they started, they went up and asked the devotees, can you kindly move, please move, you're blocking the hall. But everybody was there with Prabhupada, and thinking, well, I'm not going to leave, I don't care. Anybody says, I'm here with Srila Prabhupada, and that's it. Nobody would move. So the airport workers were just absolutely, what to do, you know, it's a big problem. I finally found one official-looking devotee. It was a sannyasi who was a GBC man. They happened to find him. So they asked, they told him what was the problem. So he immediately, being very responsible GBC man, you see, he stood up on a chair and he made an announcement, all devotees should immediately leave this area. Made a big loud announcement. Nobody would move. Except one devotee. Can you guess who that one devotee was who moved? Srila Prabhupada. You see, Prabhupada, oh, I'm a devotee, and it's now been announced that all the devotees must leave this area. So he got up to move, you see. So just see the humble mood of Srila Prabhupada. You see? So this is actually how Prabhupada captured us, by that wonderful humility. You see? It wasn't some advertisement that he was the Jagad Guru that attracted us. Of course, he didn't advertise. His followers advertised. But what was really attractive about Prabhupada was his humility. That was so attractive quality. That genuine ability he had to love us in spite of our, you know, unlimited faults and flaws. That ability of Prabhupada to totally selflessly give himself to us. You see, that's how he captured us. When we saw a person who's willing to give himself this much to us, then we want to try to at least make some meager attempt to repay him the love that he's giving us. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada captured us by love, by his own pure love for us in the service of his Guru Maharaj, in the service of Sri Krishna. He selflessly gave himself to us to connect us with this wonderful process of understanding Krishna as the knower of all that has happened in the past, the knower of all that is happening in the present, and the knower of all things that are yet to come, and the knower of all living entities. And that person who is not known by anyone, practically speaking. How many people really understand who is Krishna? Most people have not the foggiest idea, and those who do have the wrong idea about who is Krishna. So practically speaking, nobody knows. Mam tu vedana kashchana. No one knows me. So how do we then enter into that rare circle of persons who actually know Krishna? This is possible by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of Vaishnavas, by the mercy of Guru, by the mercy of Scripture, by the mercy of the holy names, by the mercy of Prasadam, by the mercy of the deities, by the mercy of devotion, the devotional service that Prabhupada has given us. We have the facility to actually know who is Krishna. Knowing who is Krishna, that is the most important thing. Do you know why it's so important that we know Krishna? I was giving a lecture in a high school class in Helsinki, Finland, several years ago. And I asked the students, why do you exist? One boy said, because my mother and father wanted to have a baby. Therefore, I exist. Of course, that's the material body. We understand we are Atma, we are pure spirit soul. So why does the Atma exist? Do you know why the Atma exists? Anyone have any idea why the Atma exists?
Yes.
It is very simple. Anyone has any yes?
Yes, because Krishna is forever.
Krishna is forever, yes. Why? Why is the Atman? Why does he exist?
Yeah, because Krishna is forever and we are a part of the...
Yes, yes. Why? Yes, that's true. Mm. Why? So we exist because Krishna is manifesting us from himself as confirmed in chapter 10, verse 8 of the Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. I am the source of everything. I am the source of all material and spiritual world. Everything emanates from me. So the question is, why is Krishna emanating us from himself? Why is he bother emanating us? I mean, he could just be out there all alone. Yes?
To give us his love.
Hmm?
To give us his love.
Yes. Actually, the answer is given by Chanakya Pandit. He says, a home without children is a desert. It's like a mother, it's like a husband and wife, they get married and they want to have some children. For a home life, happy home. So Krishna, even though he is Atma Ram, he is self-enjoyer, but to expand his own enjoyment, he manifests Radha Rani, his Ladini Shakti, and so many other unlimited numbers of living entities are also his Shakti, his energy. The Vishnu Tattva and the Jiva Tattvas. They are all the emanations from Krishna. Because Krishna wants to give love and he wants to receive love. Therefore, he expands an unlimited number of living entities from himself. Therefore, the purpose of our existence is to love Krishna. Actually, we have no other reason to exist except for the purpose of loving Krishna. That's why, if we are not Krishna conscious, no matter how much facility we may have, you see, no matter how much facility Mr. Fish may have on the land, he will not be satisfied because he is a creature of the water. So our water is love for Krishna, loving relationship with Krishna. So actually nothing, absolutely nothing can satisfy us save and except having a loving relationship with God, with Krishna. So that's why this Krishna Consciousness Movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON, with the founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, is the most important institution on this entire planet. It is the leading educational institution in this universe, actually, to bring everyone back to knowing who they are and teaching them the practical techniques of how to actually be who they are. Sometimes people say, oh, you Hare Krishna people, you are a cult. But this is not cult. Any gentleman who has any brain, if you explain to him and he understands, we can tell you who you are and how to be who you are. What gentleman will object to know, my dear sir, would you like to know who you really are? Oh, no, no, I'd rather be an illusion. Any gentleman would be very eager to know who he is, you see. And once he knows who he is, to be taught how to actually be who he is, what gentleman would object to them? So actually, our Krishna Ganya's movement, people inundate the entire world. Because this is the only place where you can get information as to who you actually are and to be who you actually are. No one else has this knowledge available. Prabhupada only has given it in its perfect form. Its full and perfect form is only given in this world by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. No other Gaudiya sannyasis have ever been able to explain it as fully and perfectly as Srila Prabhupada and to practically manifest it in the form of a movement. A worldwide movement. Prabhupada is unique. Don't think of going anywhere else. Everyone else is simply a glowworm compared to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada has it. It's all here in Prabhupada's books and in Prabhupada's movement. Everything we need to make our lives perfect and to make everyone's lives perfect throughout the entire world, if they will simply hear our message with an open mind. That's it. So we can stop this point and we can ask if there's some questions. Yes.
You said if you ask a gentleman, do you want to know who you are, mm-hmm. then he would not object. But most of the people, they think they know already who they are. And that's so they don't.
Yeah, that's right. That's the problem. They're very puffed up. They think they already know who I am. Yes, I am such and such, big executive. Yes, that's a thing. That's the pitiable condition of the modern day world. We have everything necessary to give them eternal life full of knowledge and bliss, but because they're so damn proud, they're not interested. It's a shame. It's a crying shame. Modern day world. It's horrible. That we've given everything, we have everything available to make the whole world peaceful and happy. No more crime, no more terrorism. Even the weather will become like a paradise, a tropical paradise. Gradually, if everybody takes the Krishna consciousness, you'll have mangoes growing here in Berlin. Everything is available to have a happy, wonderful existence, but we're so damn bad. Yes. Yes. That's true. Therefore, I say they're not gentlemen. Because I said any gentleman, you may notice. I didn't say any man walking on the street. I said any gentleman. They're not gentlemen. You see, that's the fact. They're not gentlemen. Any gentleman, he will be. Yes, tell me who I am. But they are all ruffians. They're all ruffians. That word, durjana, they are durjana. Ruffians, rogues. There are two types of men. There is satjana or sajjana, pious men, saintly men, gentlemen. And there are durjana, the rogues. So the reality is there's a very, very small number of actual saintly men or pious men now. Practically everyone is rogue to varying degrees. They're all durjana, rogues. Therefore, they couldn't give a damn about being told who they are. They think they already know, as you pointed out. Because they're not gentlemen. They're all rogues. Questions more?
Mm. I don't really understand what means humble. It's so important to be humble. But what means this in the normal temple life?
What does it mean to be humble?
Yes.
In normal temple life.
Humble means to always worship the devotees. To always find, always see the good qualities in the devotees. Practically, it means always to find, even the most neophyte devotee who's got so many faults, should always find, see and appreciate the good qualities in all the devotees. And that's what it means to be humble. There's always some good quality. Anybody, even karmi, they always have some good quality. You see, especially, but devotee especially. We have to always see what is the good quality in the devotees and appreciate that and encourage their their good qualities, by our appreciation of them. Everybody needs to be encouraged. We're all struggling with our faults, you know, overcoming our faults. So whatever good we have in us, if the other devotees can appreciate that, that will encourage us to become even better in our Krishna consciousness. So humility means to always appreciate the good qualities of the devotees. That's what it means. Just saying, well, I have to be humble. No. That's there, but the way to become humble is to appreciate others. Someone says, well, I just got to put myself down. Like one devotee wrote Prabhupada, he thinks, I'm going to be really humble. You know, I write Prabhupada a letter. Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. You heard about that? I wrote a letter. Srila Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. You know what Prabhupada wrote him back? He said, you're not the most fallen. You're not the most of anything. You're simply insignificant. That was the answer he got back from Prabhupada. So meditating on yourself, you see how low I am. No, that's not the idea of humility. You're just worshiping yourself, then, thinking I'm great because I think I'm humble. It's another form of puffing yourself up. But actual humility is to always appreciate the good qualities of the devotees, all the devotees. Always appreciate, well, this devotee has that nice quality, that devotee has that nice quality. In this way, always be appreciating the devotees and try to serve them with love as much as possible. Then automatically you're humble. Any other questions? Is everything me? Yes.
As you just explained that to be humble means to worship the devotees, actually.
Yeah.
When we chant the holy name, it's said it's very important to be humble. So we also, so it means that we worship the holy name.
Yes. Yes. Worshipping the holy name means you can't have any. You can't be critical of the devotees. That's the first impediment we have against chanting Hare Krishna purely, is to be critical of the devotees. This devotee is that bad. That devotee has that bad quality, and you know, finding fault with the devotees, that will spoil our chanting of the holy name. The first offense is to be critical of the devotees who have dedicated their lives to Krishna consciousness movement. That's the first offense. So we have to always appreciate. By appreciating the devotees in our chanting, which we're doing anyway, every day, if we're appreciating the devotees, then our chanting will be very sweet. It'll be very sweet chanting. It will be enchanting chanting. If chanting is not enchanting, that means it's offensive. If you're not enchanted by your chanting, then you're committing aparad. Very simple. You must be enchanted by the chanting. That is a sign that you're actually nicely absorbed in humility. You understand? Questions more? Yes.
So what to do in a case that you see a bad quality or some anarchan, a devotee, and when devotee is performing this, he's disturbing others. So, and usually sometimes devotees then, you know, we talk, you know, and he's like this, and yeah, and again, and even if you tell to devotee that this and this is happening and you're annoying others with this, and he's still doing it, mm-hmm. What to do in this case? Not to criticize,
it's also the duty of the older devotees to help the younger devotees get over their faults. The simple way to say it is this: somebody has to correct us for our faults, because Lord knows we're full of them. Somebody has to tell us what's wrong with us. We require devotees who can do that. So who's qualified to point out our faults? That devotee who can see the good in me and can see the bad both, who can appreciate my good qualities and see my faults, that person is qualified to correct me. You see? A person who can only see the faults in others, he's not qualified to correct them, because he doesn't have transcendental vision. He's on the mundane platform. But a person who can see the good and the bad in a person, genuinely appreciates the good qualities in a devotee, he's qualified to give correction, to correct the devotee's faults. You understand? Somebody has to, if you're sick, you have to go to a doctor. So we're all sick. We require senior devotees who can point out to us our inertness. We require them. So a senior devotee doesn't have a fault-finding propensity. He's actually advanced devotee. He's free of any fault-finding propensity, but yet he points out the faults as a service, out of love. Not out of pride, but out of love. You see? That's the person who's qualified to correct us, who does so not out of pride or egotism, but who corrects us out of genuine love for us, and he really wants to help us. Out of compassion, he's correcting us. Then those sort of corrections are very good. If we have genuine compassion for a person, then we are qualified to correct them. And if we don't, we're not qualified to correct them. So this is a real challenge for temple managers. They have a heart, very compassionate heart, to be able to do their service and maintain it throughout their life. We see temple managers come and go in the history of ISKCON because they weren't acting on the level of compassion. But if one who can act on the level of compassion, they can be a spiritual leader throughout the whole life and be very happy in that service. So one simply has to develop genuine compassion for the devotees, genuine love. I want to help these people. Krishna, please bless me that I can do this service in a mood of completely in a mood of service. It's the same thing, the same responsibility is there for someone who's an initiating spiritual master. They have the same challenge. They have to act completely, wholly out of compassion. No lording over tendency or enjoying tendency can be there in their service, otherwise they won't make it. They'll become polluted by an enjoying spirit. So we have those who are in the positions of leadership, temple presidents, GBC, sannyasis, gurus, they have to pray very intensely for purity in their service so they can do their service first class. Any other questions?
You mentioned a few times that Prabhupada is our founder chai of ISKCON, and in ISKCON we have already a system that a spiritual master doesn't have to be necessarily liberated, but he can act as a spiritual master. Is there a difference between the surrender to Prabhupada, like disciples to Prabhupada, and our surrender to the spiritual master? Or is there some things which only, we don't have to do some difference in practice?
Yes.
Prabhupada is a liberated spiritual master.
Mm-hmm.
So should we follow Srila Prabhupada? Or should we follow our spiritual master? What is the difference between them?
Actually,
Like Prabhupada is a Mahabhagavat.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And in ISKCON we have also the system, and Prabhupada writes in his books, that also a not liberated person can act as a spiritual master.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the surrender process as it from a disciple, is there a difference? Like
yes. There is yes and no at the same time. There is a difference, and there's not a difference, both. As long as we're following the order of Srila Prabhupada, then it's non-different. Let's say there's a spiritual master who's not an Uttamadhikari, he's a Madhyamadhikari, for example. But the Uttamadhikari, founder Acharya of our movement, is given the order that you follow your authority. Even when Prabhupada was on this planet, we had GBC, we had temple presidents. And Prabhupada instructed me personally, he said, do whatever your GBC and your temple president says without questioning whether it's right or wrong. That was his order to me. The temple president was practically like a guru in those days. Whatever the temple president said, everybody did. Because Prabhupada, the temple president said direct connection with Prabhupada. They could go meet Prabhupada, they could write him, they had a direct connection with Prabhupada. And whatever the temple president said, everybody just did it because he was the authority. So we didn't think the temple president was a Mahabhagavat. But we knew that he was empowered by the Mahabhagavat to act on behalf of the Mahabhagavat. So the same thing with gurus nowadays. Of course, some people say, well, you know, nobody's a Mahabhagavat except for Prabhupada, but wait a minute. What's your proof? How do you know that you think Prabhupada is so impotent he can't produce Mahabhagavats by his potency? How do you know that someone makes a statement, well, I know for sure, you know, we all know for sure that none of Prabhupada's disciples are Mahabhagavats. Well, wait a minute, what's your proof? How do you know they're not Mahabhagavats? You can say, well, so many of them fell down. Well, they obviously weren't Mahabhagavats. It's like in Germany, you had a big one, and just because some people, you know, who we thought were Mahabhagavats turned out to be Mahamudhas. You see, that doesn't mean that, it's like, what is it? When I left India last year, I went to the money exchange to turn all my rupees back into dollars, US dollars. I had a big stack of 500 rupee notes. And I turned it all in, and they gave one of them back. They said, this one's counterfeit. So that just because there's one counterfeit rupee note, does that mean all the rupee notes are counterfeit? No. A counterfeit rupee note cannot exist unless there are genuine rupee notes. So because some persons who we thought were advanced gurus turned out to be not so in the final analysis, does that mean that all the notes are counterfeit? No. There's an age-old system. And that system is still current. Some people say, well, you know, because so many gurus fell down, we should just have Prabhupada only as the guru. You know, let's stop the guru parampara now. We'll just bring an end to the guru parampara system. No more succession, you know, master, disciple, like that. We'll just stop it. You know, it's like saying, well, there's been so many marriages that went bad, you know, so now we'll just abolish marriage. No more marriage. Forget it. So many marriages ended in divorce, child abuse, you know, so many things. So forget it. No more marriages. So you can't say because so many gurus fell down, therefore we abolish the guru parampara system. That's an invalid argument. Our president, actually not our, I'm not really American, but the president over there said about one issue, he said, don't end it, mend it. So the Guru Parampara system, if it gets broken, you don't end the system. It's like saying, I have a headache. My dear doctor, I have a headache. He says, no problem, I'll put you to death. I'll end your headache right now. Here, I'll put a gun in your head. And in 5 seconds, you'll never have another headache again. You see? So, because if the guru system gets messed up, does that mean you just end it? You abolish it? No, you mend it. I mean, there's been messed up gurus even back in the early days of Vedic history. Look at Shukracharya. He was pretty messed up so-called guru, you know. He was thought to be a bona fide spiritual master by Bali Maharaj. He was thought to be a bona fide guru. But I mean, he ended up doing things that were not according to Prabhupada's books. You know, weren't according to the actual Vedic teachings. And then Bali Maharaj rejected him. And by rejecting his guru, he became, you know, and surrendering to Vamana, he became one of the 12 Mahajanas. So one has to understand. Prabhupada actually says the guru is not the center, the scripture is the center. Prabhupada says that in his books. You have to have a Shastric basis. A Brahmin means one who knows the Shastra and who teaches Shastra. That is Brahmin. You see? So the Brahmin, he is protected by Shastra. And he studies Shastra, and he seeks a person who can be his spiritual master, who is the living embodiment of the Shastra. You see? We need two Bhagavatams. We need book Bhagavatam and person Bhagavatam. Both are required. And the idea that only Prabhupada can be the person Bhagavatam is not what Prabhupada told us. He pushed us that we should also become Mahabhagavats. He wanted every one of his disciples to become Mahabhagavat. Prabhupada personally ordered me. He said, now you just become qualified to see Krishna face to face. Personal order that Prabhupada gave me. That is the exclusive consciousness of a Mahabhagavat. Prabhupada is ordering me to come to that stage. So, that's a fact that even if one's guru with an ISKCON is a Mahabhagavat, still he's not the founder Acharya. Whether he's Madhyam Adhikari or Uttam Adhikari, doesn't matter because he's still not the founder Acharya of the movement. In this movement, everything is done according to the instructions of the founder Acharya. No one can say, well, I'm going to change it now. You only have to chant 8 rounds. No. You see? In this movement, everything is done strictly according to the instructions of our founder Acharya, his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Doesn't matter what level of Krishna consciousness my guru is, he has to do what Prabhupada said. That's the bottom line. So if my guru is acting according to what Prabhupada said, then he's properly situated. By following him, I'm properly situated. If he doesn't do what Prabhupada said, then I can reject him, like Bali Maharaj did. But guru is required. That is confirmed again and again. Mundaka Upanishad, Tadvaganatam Sagurume Vabhikachat Samitpanihi Shrotiyam Brahmanishtam. Bhagavad Gita Tadvadi Pranipatena Pariprasnena Seveya Upadekshanti Tigyanam Ganinas Tatpatarshinaha Bhagavatam Tasmad Gurum Prabhajita Jagyashushaya Uttamam. It is confirmed again and again. Acharyavan. It is Purusha Veda. It is confirmed again and again. Guru is required. Some people think, well, I'll just be my own guru. I'll just read the books and be my own guru. But you're not following the books if you do that. You're not following the books. You're concocting your own system and you're accepting your mind as guru. And I can tell you your mind is a very, very, very bad guru. It's gotten you into this mess called the cycle of birth and death. Any other questions? Yes.
Please, would you say something about your person?
About my?
Your person.
Person.
About yourself.
About myself? Well, I'm, little bit about myself. All right. I was a young renegade, you know, radical, you know, dropout, countercultural songwriter back in the 60s. And to me, the only life that was worth living would be a life of spiritual perfection and revolutionizing the planet, basically. I didn't see any other purpose. So I was trying to come up with songs that would actually spiritualize the world, you know. But I couldn't do it because I was still an illusion. But then I found that there was one guru, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who had the perfect vision of how one could achieve spiritual perfection and also how the whole world could be spiritualized. So instead of trying to do my own thing independently, I just said, I'll just surrender to Prabhupada. So I joined this movement in 71 in Texas. Under the guidance and inspiration of His Holiness, Vishnu Jana Maharaj. Vishnu Jana Maharaj was very, very kind to me, even though I was a very roguish young boy. He was very merciful to me. He allowed me to live in the ashram. He even told Prabhupada I was doing very nice service. I couldn't imagine how he could say that because I knew what a rascal I was. But he wrote Prabhupada, this boy, he's doing very nice service. So Prabhupada said, I will accept him as my disciple because you have recommended. I was thinking, how merciful is Vishnu Jan Maharaj? So, in this way, Prabhupada accepted me in August 12th of 1971 with one letter from London, England. He was there at the time. And Prabhupada, I wrote, when I sent my guru a dakshina, Prabhupada was in London and I was in Texas, so I got to mail, when I got initiated, it gave me an excuse to write Prabhupada, because I had to send my guru dakshina in. So, I was very inspired by Vishnu Jana. He had a very, you know, he was really dedicated to spreading the movement. He was a really fired up preacher. So I must have, I don't remember what I told Prabhupada, but I must have said something about wanting to spread the movement. So Prabhupada wrote me back. He said, I can see that you're a very sincere and enthusiastic boy. He said, now continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. So that was one of the very first personal instructions I received from Srila Prabhupada. And I took that order very, very seriously because ISKCON has been through so much difficulty in so many ways. But I never gave up my enthusiasm because Prabhupada ordered me. He gave me this, if you do this, you will be blessed. So I took it very seriously. I've never given up my enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness or for ISKCON, in spite of all the ups and downs over 35 years. I've never given up that enthusiasm, and I never will. And that enthusiasm, by the mercy of Prabhupada, just keeps growing and growing and growing. And when I come here and see all you wonderful young, well, you're not so young, but everybody else is. When I see when I see all this wonderful enthusiasm of these young people, it's just so wonderful for me to see that. Because I know that this movement is going to grow and it's going to take over the whole world. So any other questions? Now we can stop here. We'll have some more opportunity in the morning. The Bhagavatam class to dive deeper and deeper into this sweet ocean of Krishna Bhakti. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.